on 97.5 and 102.5 FM, DAB and online at pulse1.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Pool Show on Pulse 1. With Provident, lending a helping hand since 1880. Visit provident.co.uk.
This is the Robbie Hunter Pool Show and you're listening to the best bits of 2016. We're off for Christmas now, but fear not. We'll be back for pre-season on January the 4th, so make sure you tune in for all of the usual rugby league banter with me and the boys. So for now, wherever you are listening, enjoy.
The Robbie Hunter Pool Show. News and views.
Evening, boys.
Good evening.
How you doing?
All good.
All good.
Yep. So, are you English again now that New Zealand are not number one?
Are you up cocker?
Yeah. just jump ship all the time.
100%. Right? Whoever's... Well, actually, no. England's still three. They're still third, aren't they? So, I've got to watch who I'm supporting. I'm like, g'day, mate.
No, you can never
do that. Could never do that. I would never do that. I'm not that guy. Interesting, we actually here on the radio show yesterday, we had Ewan, what's it called? The legal training. And basically, we spent an hour being told what we are and are not allowed to say on air. And to be honest, boys, the majority of what we say and how we say it is slanderous.
Oh, okay.
Ewan, you just need to stay on the mute button. Just mute.
Luckily, it's not our show.
What we say, you know what I think is quite weird is this country is so tribal. So the way people talk in Yorkshire to the way people talk in Surrey, for example, there's, you know, colloquialisms up here that means something completely different in the other part of this country. It's not like that in New Zealand. I mean, New Zealand just speak one type of English. New Zealand.
It's not real English, is it? You can't tell us how we speak.
But I don't know what you mean. I surely can.
I was just about to say a word then, but yeah, it makes two different things. I don't know if you hear the word tup, it means something totally different in Lancashire than it does in Yorkshire. And I found that out when I was a kid, when I was about 16.
Are we allowed to say
no,
it?
No, probably not.
No. That wasn't on the list. I never saw a tup on the list.
One's an egg, but one's been something else.
Don't say it. It sounds bad.
Say the thing, what it means, that nicely, because I've never heard
of it.
The nice thing.
The nice thing's a headbutt over this way.
A headbutt?
Yeah, so, you know, if you tup...
not a nice thing.
If you tup someone...
you tup someone. The nice thing. Oh, it's a headbutt.
No, but the nice
thing. That's a Yorkshire mentality, that. Isn't that through and through? Oh, the nice thing, yeah, it's a fool. It's a nice thing. It's a headbutt.
Everyone headbutts the mate now and again. It's a sign of affection.
We're on now, Denny Solomon, and he's one try off, equally in the 36 scored by the Bradford Bulls, Leslie Vinicolo and Danny Maguire in 2004. Ain't that a great feat?
But let's take five off, Les, because remember, I give him five of my kicks in
that one game.
In that one game.
We need to talk about this because it's a massive achievement, but I'm at Hull now, so I've heard a story on the different foot. Usually I tell all the big stories about Les trampling over wingers, killing them. I've seen him, amazing, best winger I've ever seen. But I've had to experience it now from a different point of view. We're talking about Hull FC against Bradford Bulls, and... Nathan Blacklock.
Yeah.
He was on the wing against Les. So anyway, he was on one game and he had a game against him. Had a nightmare. Les scored five tries. So they've pulled him into office and they've said, mate, you had an absolute nightmare. We're gonna switch your wings. He went, stop. Everybody stop. Listen, I'm going to really make up for this game. I'm up for it massively. Put me on his wing again. I'm going to sort this out. Anyway, that game, Les scored six. That's a true story. True story.
What happened then? Did you get sacked?
Yeah, go on, get out of this club. Six, let me make up for it. Okay, six tries.
All right, Super 8 started last weekend. Boys, did you catch the St. Helens versus Warrington match?
I did. I watched it.
What did you think of that match, full stop?
I thought it was a really poor first half. I expected a lot more higher quality, completed sets, a bit more high skill level, and I was really, really disappointed. But then in the second half, I thought it turned into quite a good game, and it finished really intense, and I thought Saints are starting to look good.
They are. You called Saints last weekend as well, didn't you?
I thought it turned out, it ended up a good game. I thought I was really disappointed with the first half because I really thought it was going to be a massive, really game of nutrition. I thought it'd be like set for set, kicking in good high skill
like
level.
Boring.
And it just became a little bit of a joke with the knock-ons and the
really
sloppy skills for this time of the year. But I thought it turned round and turned into a really good game.
Did we see a reflection of a knock-on effect from the Challenge Cup final once again? Robert, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, you just took the words out of my mouth, Rob. It isn't just the physical sort of side that goes with playing in that game. It's the mental side.
The semi-finals we're talking about, the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, the semi-final week before, you know. I don't care what you say. As soon as you win that game, it's the elation that goes with it. You're going to get to play at Wembley in front of 80, 90,000 people. It's a bit of a dream. You know, your boyhood ambitions are nearly coming true. And I don't care what you say. You have a couple of beers, you chill out with lads, and you celebrate a little bit. And
The next game pales in comparison, doesn't it? From an emotional point of view.
When you walk out, and even if there's still 15,000 people there going nuts, it still doesn't have the same feel to it somehow, especially
or
the first
importance.
Game. Or importance.
It's backing up emotionally. Backing from where you've come from, back it up again to produce another good performance is sometimes hard.
Leon, you played with the Bradford Bulls of the past that knew how to deal with that sort of knock-on, that hangover from their success of those sort of games. You then went on to play in the St. Helens team that, again, they knew how to deal with the hangover of success in those semi-finals. Do you think, in reflection of Hull's performance and Warrington's performance over these opening Super 8 Super 8 matches, both of these teams, your own team included, didn't actually get their heads around that properly?
Maybe not, but I think our team selection had a lot to do with it. I think we missed quite a lot of players out. And also, it's a new format. When we used to play, the format was just a league table and you finished what you did. Whereas now it's like, this is the Super 8s and everybody's kind of, this is a new season. So it's a kind of a new start and Castleford knew that they couldn't lose. For them to have a chance of getting in the top four, they've got to win this game. So to them, it was a do or die.
Yeah.
So it was a new situation, new scenario. Yeah, we didn't handle it well, but... Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a different scenario than
I
was playing.
I've not really given that much thought because he's bang on in there, isn't he? The game has changed.
Yeah, that's when I got to play a lot of my games when I was 16, 17. If you got to a final, the young lads got played week after. Yeah. You know, we did. Me, Gazock, Sean O'Loughlin, Sean Briscoe, we were the lads that played the week after to give the lads a bit of a rest, you know, because like Leon said, it didn't actually matter.
If
you won or lost at that.
Now it does. It does really matter.
It does, yeah.
And so the team that had the week off and had a week to prepare looked the fresher, they looked the fitter, looked a little bit more up for it because it was do or die for them. They had to win that game.
And the emotion around it, I got to admit, this seems to be like with the Bash weekend, with the Magic weekend, with the Challenge Cup quarterfinals and semifinals, they pop up very quickly. And then you've got the normal league matches before the Super 8s hit. There's so many emotional highs. I got to admit, God, it sounds exhausting for a professional athlete.
Well, it is, but also they have 2 weeks preparation to the side that are in the Challenge Cup. So for 2 weeks, Darryl Powell have been studying, focusing on all and working out how they're going to be and what they're going to do. Like Leon said, getting his players fresh. You know, you have a 2 week window to just get them fully primed for that game. I think it makes a big difference.
Massive difference.
It does. Okay, what about, let's just talk about a gentleman that I've really been impressed with over the recent past, over the past probably 2 to 3, 4 weeks, and that's Jordan Turner. He's really stepped up his game. Since announcing that he's going down and playing NRL, his game has seemed to have turned around. He played a monster game the other night against Warrington, and he helped lead St. Helens to their success. What is it about the pressure valve once you pin your flag to a post and you no longer have to worry about concerning yourself or where you're going to play the following year? It seems to for a lot of players to be able to clear their mind and get them to play the football that they want to.
I think for most players, they want to prove that they're not there for the ride. They want to prove that they still want to play for that team. And once it becomes public, you've got to show a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I think you've got a little bit more to prove that you want to finish on a good note and you want to be remembered in a good light. Also, he's playing for Saints, which they're a winning team. They've got a winning mentality. And they've come into a rich vein of form. Obviously, he's playing well off the back of the forwards. He's playing the same player run a couple of times with the lead out the back, lead with a little bit of an out ball going right to the line. I thought it looked like he had a little bit more time than, say, against the Wigan, because you get a lot of inside pressure from the forwards and like to take the halfbacks off the ball. But on Warrington's, their line speed wasn't too fast. It was kind of hanging back a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it gave the halfbacks a lot of time to go right into line. Walsh were going to the line. Turner were going right into line, feeding Lewin McCarthy Scarbrook on a bit of an out ball. And he were having a lot of joy, a lot of success. He did that a few times with Lewin. And then he went to the line on the third or fourth occasion and went.
Sold it.
Try time, but yeah, a little bit like.
One-on-one, didn't he?
A little bit like old school Leon Price.
Yeah, I love it. Now, one of the other talking points of the game was Jack Hughes and Lewin McCarthy Scarsbrook, McCarthy Scarsbrook from St. Helens, Jack Hughes from Warrington. They squared up a little bit. Jack Hughes had a little bit of a grey cloud, saying he may have eye gouged Lewin McCarthy Scarsbrook. Did you guys see that?
I saw it. Did you see it, Luke?
No, I saw the still of it.
The still.
Just the
it
still.
Doesn't look great, does it?
The still look great.
But... The way I saw it was Jack Hughes and McCarthy Scarsbrook, they squared up. Jack Hughes went to push McCarthy Scarsbrook in the face and sort of didn't get without, you know, didn't wasn't able to push him away because everybody come in at that point. So he just squeezed. I mean, I don't know if he was looking at
him. Did he get a game for it?
He's got off. Yeah, it wasn't deemed to be an eye gouge, and I don't think it was.
I'll tell you what worse than that. When Saints played against Wigan, and Lewis squared up with that, is it Nuasal? Did you see it?
Yeah, did you see it?
So he got taken off the ball, he got whacked, and then he didn't do it. He got his hair pulled, he got whacked, and he got tackled off the ball and punched, and he got 10 minutes. He got sent off for 10 minutes for getting his hair pulled, punched in face, and tackled off a ball, and he got 10 minutes. How can that happen? What are you supposed to do?
I didn't even get to throw a punch.
What did he do? No, he got battered. He got 10 minutes for getting battered. I couldn't stop laughing, man. This game's a joke.
It's all about rugby. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 1.
This is the Best Bits of the Year show featuring all the biggest guests that have graced the studio over the past 12 months. One bigger than most with this man, Stuart the Beast Fielden. Stuart, fantastic to have you on the show. How you doing, buddy? Look at you, you're as big as a house.
At the minute, I'm on with becoming a personal trainer and launching Fielden Fitness.
Fielden Fitness.
And that's going to be...
rolls, two Fs.
Kind of fits, doesn't it? It does. Fanatics. Fielden Fitness.
Fitness, Fanatics, and it fits.
Right, anymore? and that's going to be launched shortly in the next 4 weeks at stuartfielding.com. And that's sort of the journey of
staff. Oh, sorry, a shameless plug.
Yeah, very shameless.
Get in there, son.
Always.
You've got
always.
The platform.
At the minute, I'm kind of the back end of finishing my level 3.
And how's the journey been in regards to being educated once again? Because you've done a whole host of things. I mean, you've got a property portfolio, you own businesses. Why the fitness world? I mean, look at you, in phenomenal shape. You're a walking example of how players should live their lives post careers. Weirdly, it doesn't happen much though. These rubber rings start to appear around players' bellies, you know, once you stop competing. But I mean, you're living proof that actually it's good to continue on with it. What's the passion? What's the rationale behind it?
Just part of keeping fit and healthy. I mean, especially because I can't run. I stopped playing in...
Chocolate knees.
Yeah, chocolate knees. Got an infection in the knee, so that stopped the end of the playing, but that also obviously impacts quite largely on fitness. I mean, I'd still be playing now if it wasn't for my knee.
So the fitness side...
How old do you think?
30, you're the same, I reckon.
Working backwards.
35, a year older than Leon.
I wouldn't mind being 35, I'm 37. Just turned 37.
JP was, JP's
he's
what, 39?
He's got to be 39 now.
He came out of retirement. You know, he played quite well for Hulk Howard during the Super 8 qualifiers. So you'd still have two more years left in you.
Theoretically, yeah.
Theoretically.
Yeah, without doubt. No, I would have. But unfortunately, you know, in career... Part of rugby league is injuries, and career-ending injuries are also part of rugby league, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was quite tough for you, obviously. You went in for a clean-out on your knee, but you ended up getting an infection.
Yeah, it's a it's a strange one. So you, I played about 445 games. So you're thinking, right, if you're going to finish.
Well, that is a lot of games, man.
It's a few.
That's a lot of mileage. Is that Super League games, but then including the internationals that you played all together?
Yeah, 35 internationals and cups and all the rest. So that's in totality all the games. So you're thinking, right, in all those minutes you get injured, you're going to get done in the game, aren't you? You're going to get, you know, a really bad ACL, an unhappy try, whatever it is. You know, the worst injuries I ever got were at training.
Normally by yourself.
Not by myself. No,
a lot of people don't realise, but Stuart was a bit of a nightmare to train with because the guy doesn't have a second gear or third gear. It's basically everything is at ramming speed. And it's frightening because, you know, like sometimes you had to pull Stu aside and go, Stu, we're teammates. We're on the same side. Stu, you know, a guy like me who's half his size. Stu, I'm half your size. You know, take it easy on me. I remember sometimes you're flying out of the line in captain's knock to put pressure on Paul Deacon and completely cleaning him out.
I think you're mistaken there, Roy. As the song
I'm
goes,
mistaken
it
all.
Wasn't me.
It wasn't me. Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't me. So let's talk about the grand final. Mate, you, this was your first grand final as a spectator.
Yeah.
You played in 7 grand finals yourself. The last time you went to Old Trafford, basically you went there to play for Wigan. You were successful.
Yeah.
So the last time you went to Old Trafford, you walked away with a gold ring. A very happy man. And obviously... last weekend, you went as a spectator for the first time. What was that like?
Well, a bit surreal. Certainly, we drove on there, me and the missus. And so parking's a strange one because I've actually never driven. Well, I did once in 1998, but since then I've never driven to Old Trafford. So the next seven, visits
You're
after
on a
that,
bus.
We're on a bus. The bus takes you straight in, literally into the tunnel,
to the front door.
Yeah. Well, not even that. Pretty sad.
No missing about.
Knock knock. Yeah, straight in, you're away, and obviously leaving, you get straight back on the bus, apart from up and being in the lounge. So it's a bit of it's something I've never done before, a kind of a first, so it was strange. It was, in one way, it was nice because you get to kind of be a fan, so you see what the fans kind of experience at a grand final or a final. You know, they're both similar at the Challenge Cup and grand final. So it was an experience, and to top it off, what a game it was.
Oh, yeah, I got to admit, yes, what a fantastic game. Sean Wayne, in his post-match press conference, said he didn't feel at any point that the game was going to get away from them. Actually, but I think the opening 25 minutes or 20 minutes, it was all about Wigan. And then the second half of the first half, the following 20 minutes, it was all Warrington winning at the break just ahead. But at halftime, Wigan come out and they really pressed home, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, before the game, I had a chat with a few people and I maintained that even at half-time that Wigan were going to win by 2. And the reason for that was that I think it's what's the culture of the Wigan club is the mental toughness. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got all sorts of, words up there in the club and things like that.
It's a culture that's kind of embedded and it's been embedded in there since like the late 70s, isn't it? Well, you know, when you left Bradford in the middle of 2006.
Yeah.
Was that evident when you walked into the place, or did you just have to recreate it again?
It was totally different. I mean, obviously you had the great Wigan team, didn't you? The Hanley, the O'Fires, and they dominated everything. And certainly at that time when Brian went on there in 2006, so he's taken over, the club were losing, weren't they? They lost 12 games in a row. They were bottom of the league.
Yes, that's right. There was the risk of relegation into the championship, which was sort of, everyone was frightened at it because Wigan was such a powerhouse as a brand.
Yeah, without doubt. Everyone, if you speak to anyone in anything about rugby, if you so down south anywhere that's not really familiar with rugby league, they know Wigan, don't they? Everyone's heard of Wigan from those glory days when it used to be on BBC. So when we sort of went there with Nobby, it was something different. You know, everything was changing. Millwater just left, kind of been sacked. Nobby took over and brought a lot of the steel and a lot of things. And I think the credit for that year of rescuing the club needs to go to Nobby. The personnel he brought in, he brought in quite a few players. I wasn't meaning that. He brought in quite a few, didn't he? Radlinski, Dobson. You know, he brought quite a few players in there.
Do you agree with Sean Wayne saying that that is probably the best win that Wigan's ever achieved? I think what he's trying to suggest is actually talking about the adversity that the club was having to deal with, players with the likes of Lachlan really sort of only coming into the squad a day before, and the fact that they haven't functioned completely well for throughout the entirety of this year, but they've been able to achieve Super League success. They had some adversity also. John Bateman got internally suspended for, I think, something like 8 weeks. And at the time he was travelling along as potentially the man of steel as the number one performer. Also, the confusion that the suspected issues that caused within the squad itself, but they were able to get over that and through that adversity still come away with the silverware. So do you agree that that probably for them was the best grand final win that they've been that they've enjoyed?
It's got to be up there, because that's the fourth grand final win, is it?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be up there just because, like you said, the adversity they faced, they weren't hitting the straps really all year, were they?
No.
Kind of,
but they were there or thereabouts, weren't they? They finished the Super League second, but for me, they weren't really on the radar. It was all about Warrington and Hull FC.
Yeah, they were. One of the key moments, I think, the telling point, and that's what one of the reasons I always thought Wigan were going to win, certainly as we spoke about the mental toughness side, which is without doubt a massive kind of strong point for Wigan, and always, I think, always certainly has been since Maguire took over. And that was, if you go back to the result at Warrington against Wigan before, sort of the last game before this game, and that was when Wigan got a man sent off and they came from behind by 14 points to win.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be up there with one of the best victories for Wigan, but just shows the kind of mentality that they have. At the point, I think, because obviously there were systems in place when Nobby took over. I mean, I think the telling point there is simply that, you know, Brian did a great job, and as I said earlier, it's down to him, I think, why Wigan stayed up. Obviously, the players involved, but if he hadn't been there, if he hadn't brought the players and changed the systems in place, mm-hmm. Wigan would have been in the championship.
We love Nobby on this show.
Yeah, whatever it was called back then. But then when Maguire came in, he literally changed the club, you know, from bottom to top. And Sean's done very, very well since, without doubt. But I fundamentally, still Wigan are kind of what Maguire put in place. The system's in place. The wrestle's been torn down a little bit because it's had to be with the RFL enforcing various different rules and things like that.
Cannonball tackle.
Yeah, well, all that. But the wrestle's been torn down a lot, hasn't it? But what he brought was that kind of wrestle from Melbourne. Sort of Melbourne had been using highly successfully for 4 or 5 years before that. And that was kind of one of his fortes was Maguire. If you look when he took over at Souths, he obviously took that straight there.
Mm-hmm.
The following year, you know, they won.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what a great coach he is. But talk back to your point you said, yeah, all the things that he would put in place, the mentality side, the systems, you know, that they were all put in place by Maguire. And certainly Sean has done, you know, great things, and he's probably will have changed bits and bats. But fundamentally, like I said, I think all the systems are very similar. And touching on what you said again about the youth system, what a great, great youth system. I mean, you've got to say Leeds and Wigan have got the key leading youth elements, haven't they?
That's right, that's right. Actually, I'm just having a look at the time. We're going to go to another break, so stay with us.
Big names and big stories from the world of rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show on Pulse 1.
This is the Robbie Hunter-Paul Show, Best Bits of 2016. Hope you're enjoying the show so far. Let's get back into this year's highlights, and certainly was a highlight of mine when my former teammate and co-host Rob Parker popped in. Tell us, Rob, just on that note, tell us what you've been up to. Obviously, you left your role as commercial manager for the Bradford Bulls back in, was it March?
It was March, April time, March, something April. Like that. So,
and tell us what you've been doing with yourself, but you've been doing some pretty cool things alongside your day job.
Yeah, well, I have. I was fortunate enough, there was an opportunity that arose, and I've always been in rugby league, so I thought what better, there was an opportunity for me to step outside of rugby and try and hone my skills in sales and do stuff like that. So I actually work for Cobra Traffic Management, so they're based in Bradford, Bowling Back Lane.
Who are one of the Bulls partners?
They're one of the Bulls sponsors as well and partners, so I do the national business development for them, so that's been really good. But it's a bit of a bombshell, and I have got a face for radio, but apparently I've got a face for television as well now. So
go on.
I've recently just done some acting. I say recently, back in...
Say alongside who? Alongside who?
Are you ready for this? Are you ready, West Yorkshire? I just recently starred alongside Tom Hardy.
Oh, stop it! Stop it, round of applause. Let's give it up.
Oh, the bell's going mad
Whilst you're doing these scenes, you got Tom Hardy there, you got Rob Parker there. Who's the best looking?
Up close, to be fair, he's a good looking man. He's a little bit like me, do you know what I mean? Kind of rugged yet kind of handsome and all, everything in one.
And humble.
Everyone kept thinking it was Tom Hardy and Jason Statham, so I had to kind of keep correcting him while he was on set. So I was fortunate enough that I've known Tom for a couple of years now, and he came to me quite last minute, and there was a bit of a phone call that I thought it was a producer. There was a guy who says, hello, I'm after speaking to Rob Parker. I'm thinking, this is definitely one of my mates taking the mic now. So the guy phones me up. He said, Rob, my name's Gary. I'm one of the executive directors on Tom's new creation, Taboo. Would you be interested? Tom thinks you're perfect for a role. Obviously, there must have been some kind of love heart for Rob kind of needed. There's too much laughing going on. So he says, I think you're perfect for a role. Would you be interested? And I was like, Gary, do me a favour. It's one of the lads, like, good one. Anyway, I spoke to Tom, text him, and he was like, no, mate, I'm serious. I think you should come and, you know, there's a period drama that we're doing. I'll drop another one as well if you want to bing the bell, just get ready for it. It's directed by Ridley Scott.
Go, get in there, bing, 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 bing.
So it was like,
we're not messing about here.
It's as big as it can get, really. So I've jumped in right at the top. So I ended up... he said, right, we start filming on Wednesday, and I actually just handed him a notice in at Bradford to start work with Cobra. And I went to the guys at Cobra, and they went, listen, just prolong it a little bit. And like I said, massive thanks to Cobra. They were able and really kind of...
give you the time and space.
Yeah, so I ended up going down to London. And before we started filming on the Wednesday, I had to go down to London on the Monday to have dress rehearsal. And then, so once I had the dress rehearsal and everything like that, make sure all your costume fit and everything, I had to go over to a place called Ealing Studios, which is quite a famous studio. Mm-hmm. So I got this kind of email, this is where I've got to be, at what time, and this is who's going to meet me for a makeup test. Now, when you look at me, makeup probably
five
doesn't...
5 hours
spring,
later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
15 makeup, hours later.
So makeup doesn't really spring to mind. So, and I'm still thinking that it's one of my mates taking the mic and Tom's in on it, and they're definitely going to kind of, you know, they're all going to jump out. And Jeremy Beadle's going to be there or something. So I get to this trailer, and this guy who was like the runner, he said, right, this is Steph. Steph's going to be, you know, taking care of your makeup. So this girl called Steph, who was actually from Leeds, really nice girl, she said, oh, I Googled who you were the night before, so I always like get the running order of who I'm going to be doing makeup for.
And obviously in your Wikipedia says that you're a member of the Bobby Underpool show.
Of course, cast, yeah, yeah. So it just obviously said,
original gangster,
former,
right?
You know, rugby player. So she said, oh, I'm a big Leeds Rhinos fan. And
seriously, you know,
but it made me feel really comfortable that she knew who I was. You know, it's an industry that I'm not obviously comfortable with, or I wasn't then, I am now, being a thespian. Be an actor. So she said, right, just sit down here, and as you sit down and you put the big cape on and, you know, getting ready to have your makeup and everything done, and it's exactly how you can imagine it, you know, all the kind of mirrors with the light bulbs all kind of dotted round and everything that you would expect it to be. She said, but before we go any further, Erica, who's just at the end of the bus, she's the head of makeup, and she has to come down and we look at your character, and we go through what makeup Erica wants to do with you, and we just recreate that every day when you're on set. So I was like, right, okay, that's fine. So I'm sat there and kind of still twitching a little bit. This Erica comes down from the end of the bus, Swedish woman, pink hair, mad as a box of frogs. And as I'm sat there, she comes round and puts her hands on the back of my shoulders. And as she puts her hands on the back of my shoulders, looks into the mirror and looks at me, and she's just gone, wow, they're the most unusual ears I've ever seen. And so as I've looked round and I've said, like, are you like joking around? She's gone, look at your face, it's a mess with all those scars. You're perfect for this role. So I now have the most unusual ears that Eric has ever seen. So I might get on my business calling card or something if I ever make it.
Everybody needs a unique selling point.
Well, unusual ears is one of mine.
Definitely. So, you got a few more other things that are a little unusual.
Yeah,
though.
So I've been doing that. And,
did you
and
explain
it was,
to you how your face was caved in and you got metal plates everywhere
it
as
was,
well?
Yeah, it was just...
Your lips all over the place. And
the thing that she said again, though, after that, I said, I'm still not sure if you like taking the mick out of me. And she went, no, I'm just sick of all those good-looking people these days. Your face tells a story. You know, like, it was so, like, Hollywood industry kind of thing. But Honestly, it was the best experience that I've ever done. You know, it was a period drama, and it comes out on the BBC in January, and it was just the best thing.
And what's the premise of the storyline?
To be honest, I'm not too sure how much I can tell you. I've always wanted to say that. It's a period drama set in 1814, and there's a bit of twist with the British government and a few other little things as well. But
is it action? Can you share that? Is it action, or is it emotional, or is it a little bit of everything?
There's a little bit of everything, but there were some action scenes, and I was pretty much getting paid to go around and kill people for a living. I'm thinking, this is pretty cool.
With a million-dollar question, did you get the opportunity to do a romance scene?
No, not actually. No, it's not my bag, is it? So I've got to make sure I play to my strength. So I was just there to look mean and look hard. So, yep, that's what I've been up to. And like I say, it's something now. I've met some amazing other actors who were on the series as well. So there's a guy who's he does podcasts, and he's a poet as well, a guy called Scroobius Pip. And there's another
good
guy.
Name.
It's a great name, isn't it?
Good name.
And there was another guy on
that,
it who...
That is actually a real name. Has he got you like...
No, it's his stage name, but he's like a DJ. Anything that you can ever think to, he's just good at everything.
He's one of those guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pretty much like Paul Deakin back in the day.
And those guys.
There's another actor in it as well who was in Snatch and This Is England, a Scouser called Stephen Graham.
Yeah, great actor.
He was a great actor, and luckily, kind of between them two, I think Tom must have given the nudge, but they took me under the wing and looked after me as well, so
all
it
right.
was kind of, yeah.
Hey, it works when you've got Tom batting for you, you know, when he's on your side.
Yeah, it's not a bad one to have on your side, so, and then all of a sudden now I've started to talk about it and other people know. The amount of women that actually now want to be my friend just to try and get to him is, it's gone up a notch, let me say.
One of them first in line is your wife. All right, we're going to go to a break now. Stick with us here on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse One.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, and you're listening to the best bits of 2016. Enjoy! BJP MBE is coming out of retirement, and now you're just hanging out with the members of parliament down in the big smoke. Brilliant. Lifestyle of the rich and famous.
Well, as you used to say, Robbie, that's just how I roll.
Okay, so come on, JP, talk us through the big breaking news yesterday.
Oh, it's just that we're down to our last few players, and just before the break off for the league started, I was looking at our squad, and realistically, we had 21, 20 fit players, and after that, you're into the 17, 18, 19-year-olds who only got 3 or 4. Appearances, so I put my name down just in case it happened, and then we played against Leeds, suffered another 2 or 3 injuries, and we're a suspension at the moment and somebody else going home. We're down to our sort of like last 15 or 16, so that's when I just thought I'm going to have to play, I'm going to have to use that planning that I decided to do, I'm going to do it.
Oh, I think it's absolutely brilliant news. It's given me and Robbo faith that maybe one day we can do it also. But actually, how's your fitness? How are you feeling? How's the body feeling? Obviously, you look after yourself. You always have done. You've been an athlete for the majority of your life. But, you know, have you had this in the back of your mind that you have to keep the body ticking over, keep the hamstrings stretched out, etc.?
Yeah, I've been doing a bit over the last 6 weeks, trying to get something like, and then I had the first training session yesterday, which was a bit of a skills conditioning session, which was it was a tough session in this in the heat as well. So I was feeling it the back 20 minutes of the session, but I'm not going to be the player I was in 2015. I'm just going to go in there, try a bit of leadership, and hopefully contribute for 10-15 minutes each half.
Mate, I don't think you're going to be too far removed from what you were when you left the game in 2015. The reason why is because you've had approximately 8 months to prepare for this game. That's a positive. There's got to be a positive. If you thought about it, you know, if you're coming to the back end of your career, if last year they said, actually, JP, we're going to sign you on, we're going to contract you, but you only have to play 3 games, we're going to give you 8 months preparation for it, you probably would have jumped at it, thought, yeah, that's, I'll do that.
Yeah, I would have done, but part of that 8 month preparation is probably spent most weekends in the pub. So that's the thing that might quite kind of amper that kind of preparation.
Well, JP, I know you're a busy man, and we wish you all the very best this weekend. Are you going to get a start this weekend?
No, hopefully the idea is for me to come off the bench. I've got another couple of training sessions to get through yet, and then We'll make a call on Saturday, and if I do, then that'll be the plan to have some impact off the bench.
But you will be. So you've actually not made the team yet?
No, I've not made the cut yet. No, oh, I'm in the 19, right, but not made the cut.
You need to have a word. I thought you were director of rugby as well.
Well,
can't you just
I am,
use your authority?
Well, it was the easiest contract ever negotiated. But,
did you give yourself win bonuses and all that sort of stuff?
No, I just signed on the dotted line.
Well, you might have missed a trick there. JP, we're all going to wish you the best of luck for this coming weekend. Hope your preparations go very well, and I'm sure you're going to bring a whole heap of layers to the team. Actually, Luke Robinson just wants to add a little question.
Don't get injured too bad. You've still got a testimonial to do for me, JP.
I'll look after myself for you, Rob.
Good, cheers, mate.
With what Huddersfield have in front of them, did that make the million-pound game even more nerve-wracking?
Whatever happens, whether you go in there losing games, whether you go in winning games, it's going to be horrendously nerve-wracking. I think it's going to be awful for both sets of players. And you know what? 9 times out of 10, you know, when you get to grand finals, you get to Challenge Cups, you get to million-pound games, it's about walls of nerve. It is about big game players turning up and just, you know, and doing what they do, you know, when it matters. And I suppose that's what probably separates good players from great players, really, you know, having that ability to.
I don't think this is, for me, I've played in big games when pressure's on you to make big plays, but for me, I couldn't imagine playing in a game to ensure that my mortgage is going to get paid, or
the pressure's different.
Be able to drive my car or to pay my daughter's gymnastic fees. That's a different kind of pressure.
I don't think...
Playing to get man of match in a big game, to get your club to win a big game, to win a Challenge Cup, to get a win a grand final, that's a pressure that you put on yourself. But this pressure playing in this game is a pressure to pay your bill, to pay your mortgage, to pay your... Now that's a different kind of pressure.
Oh, it is, you know, I'm not, you know, without being daft, you know, me and my wife already spoke about, you know, look, I want to get out of this, I believe we can, and you know, I've got to show the faith and do everything we can to get out of it. But if she doesn't, she's going back full time.
No.
Because I potentially might not have a job. And that is the harsh reality. It is the harsh reality of
And you also, I mean, as a coach, you can do what you can off the field, you can create the environment, but ultimately, when it comes down to it, it's the 80 minutes with those 17 players that are chosen outside of your control.
Oh, it's horrendous, mate. You know, it's the first time for me, obviously, it's all new to me, that how little control you have once that whistle goes. And that's what's sort of frightening for you, really. You know, you put as much time and effort in you can throughout the week, through the game plan, and even the talk before the dressing rooms. Once that whistle goes, you know, you can get messages on through your water carriers and through your physios, but it's only little snippets of information, you know. At the end of the day, you're entrusting, you know. And I once heard Dennis Betts say that a coach is just responsibility. And you're just hoping and praying. And I think that's what's made Leeds such a fantastic side over the years. You know, having Sinfield and Peacock, people that can manage a game, you know. It's
equally, though, isn't that the cool thing about it? I mean, this jeopardy that we're talking about people's jobs, I know it's harsh to say it and put it into that context, but it's people's livelihoods on the line, players' livelihoods, the backroom staff, the background, you know, the amount of income that's going to be generated coming into the club for the following year. That's what creates the drama. That's what makes sport the ultimate reality television program. You know, this is what it outstrips everything. But what we're talking, I think, here is that there's extra added layers. There's always been jeopardy in sports. Anything on any given Sunday, any given Saturday, anything can happen in sport. And here we have it. The worst-kept secret in rugby league is finally out. Mm. It's official. Leon Price will be returning home in 2017.
Well.
Well,
I'm going to be a bit tear in my eye. Good day, I'm getting all emotional.
You don't know, ladies and gentlemen, but the Bradford Bulls, they announced it at 5:30 this afternoon. They did it via their social media platforms, Facebook and Twitter. And Leon's Twitter has just gone off. It's gone off the Richter, hasn't it?
It's gone off a Richter scale.
The pressure's just pouring on you.
Yeah, I know. Well, when you're not playing, like, you feel a little bit lonely. You know, you don't get many tweets or out, and then all of a sudden a little bit of news breaks and you become Mr. Popular again. So, yeah, it's last 10 minutes has been pretty crazy. Yeah.
You've enjoyed it though, haven't you?
Yeah, it's all good fun, isn't it? Feel loved again.
So come on, obviously, this is something that a lot of people have been talking about for a long time, sort of openly talking about it. Yeah. This is something that you've wanted to do really for quite a long time, hasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Well, when I left Bradford, I never really wanted to go. The only reason that I left Bradford was for career and playing wise. It wasn't I didn't want to leave the club. I didn't want to move from Bradford, but I knew that my career at that time wasn't going to move any further forward if I stayed. I was going to end up on the bench. I was going to end up just a utility player, and probably my attitude wasn't great towards the rugby, and that was the only reason I left. And then when I was due to come back from Saints, before I went to Catalan, I tried to come back to Bradford, but I got offered a deal that I couldn't refuse. And then returning
to go live on the beach yeah. and get a suntan for 3 years.
Yeah.
Be honest, that's what it was all about, wasn't
it? No,
it was either come back to Bradford and you can get the mixed match of weather that we get during summer, or you can go to Catalan and in 9 months get a tan.
Living for 3 years on a beach on back of a golf course.
Eating nothing but baguettes.
Having baguettes and putting about 10 kilos on. So I've always wanted to come back because I never felt that I achieved what I wanted to do in my career whilst playing for Bradford. I felt as though...
Well, let me have a think about this. Wait a minute. Challenge Cup medals.
Yeah.
Super League.
World clubs.
I know, but Robert. You're just greedy.
But for me, it's not about winning them trophies as part of a team. For me, it was winning the trophies as a dominant player, being at the top of your game, in a position that you want to play, leading the team around the field, not just being a bit part player that plays 10 minute subs or, you know, gets on the back of maybe you playing well or Deeks playing well or Leslie playing well. You know, you were all established players. I was still fighting my way through the team.
Mate, I was an old man by then. I was 30 years of age.
You've still done your bit in the bullshirt as in your peak years.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
me, I achieved things at Bradford, which was good. I know 2005 was really good for the Harry Sunderland, but I was never really the dominant force that I'd wanted to be playing for Bulls. So I had to go away from Bradford to achieve that with St. Helens. But at the same time, I've always wanted to come back.
Now, obviously, Nobby was the head coach at the time. Was there any conversation that you had with Nobby that sort of reinforced, gave you the confidence that you were going to get there, that opportunity? Did that not happen? Is that why you chose the different pathway, which was St. Helens, which was going and developing as a world-class number six, which you became?
Yeah, I think the start of the 2004 season, was it? Or the start of 2004, 2005, maybe, I'm not too sure. I think Henry had just left and I was fighting for the sixth position with you, maybe you and Deeks, between you, me and Deeks. And I found myself getting dropped very, very easily, as kind of per usual, to the bench. You know, if a game wasn't right, I was dropped very easily. And I'm not, you know, not blaming just Nobby and myself as well. Obviously, my performances is down to me, but I always felt as I was the easy one to drop. And I think Nobby said to me, listen, if you feel like you need to move away, then it's fine. And
well, I can say Deeks was a hard one to drop. He had a golden target, you know, like a, what do you call a sniper's target for a boot, goal kicker, half a try.
Yeah.
I've always given that sort of advice to young players, learn how to goal kick. If you learn how to goal kick, you can put £10,000 on your contract.
That's what I tell my son now.
You've actually got some footage of your son nailing it from the sideline as well, right?
Yeah, it's good.
But that conversation...
Yeah, I got the feeling from when I spoke to Nobby that, listen, Leon, you're going to really, for you to nail down a place, in my own brain, is like, you're going to have to move on. And I came to that decision at one point, and, you know, if I'm truth be said, it's the best decision I've single made in my whole life. The one decision to go to Saints changed my whole life.
Even though it was heartbreaking.
It was heartbreaking. You know, speaking to me at the time, there's no way I didn't want to leave at all. But that's life, and it's the best thing I ever did. But I always wanted to come back, and now I'm back next year.
That's all for this year, folks. Where has this year gone? We are back on January the 4th for all the build-up to the new season, so make sure you join us then. But for now, have a happy festive period, and we'll see you in the new year.
This is the Robbie Hunter Pool Show on Pulse 1. Wednesday evening from 6.